Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Hello and welcome into Tony Katz Today. I'm Susie Moore, filling in for Tony today. Had the privilege and honor of being here with you all. For those of you who don't know me, I am a native St. Louisan. I am a recovering attorney, and I am the deputy managing editor at Red State. Worked for a time with Tony at Red State, and I've been good friends for a long time, and I'm really, really honored that he asked me to fill in for him today, and I'm happy to be with you all today because we have got a lot of ground to cover. Just so you guys know, I am going to kind of pull privilege rank because I am the deputy managing editor at Red State and call on some of my contributors to be some of our guests today. We're going to be joined in the first hour by Thomas LaDuke, a good friend of mine, used to be my producer. The second hour, we're going to be joined by Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. And in the third hour, we're going to be joined by Brad Slager. Each of them has kind of their own spin and their own take on things. Lots of good contributions, lots of good things to write about, lots of good things to talk about. So I'm looking forward to speaking with each of them, and I hope you will enjoy our conversation. But in the meantime, we've got lots to talk about. And I think I wanted to start the day by talking about bloodbaths. Now, that's not a term I use very often, and I get it that it involves violent imagery, but we're watching in real time this sort of strange development that we've seen happen before, particularly when it involves Donald Trump. As you may recall, in, maybe mid-March, he was speaking at a rally and he was talking about the auto industry and comparing his economy, the economy under his administration, to the economy under Joe Biden's administration, and particularly their policies and how those will impact the auto industry, have impacted the auto industry. And he happened to say, you know, if I lose this election, if I'm not elected in November, it's going to be a bloodbath in the auto industry. That's what he was talking about. It was clear from the context. That's what he was talking about. But of course, the left and the media, which are generally one and the same, seized upon that term and started, you know, poo-pooing and tisking Donald Trump's horrific use of violent imagery, which, of course, we know that they're going to do. We've got, 7 months till the election? There's plenty of ground to cover. They're going to dissect everything he says and turn it and twist it into the most sinister thing you've ever seen. And we can expect that. If you've been paying attention at all over the past 8 years, you know that's kind of how this works. Now, I don't know if I'll say to his credit. I guess to his credit, on brand, Trump decided to lean into that. He knows that using that term now is going to send everybody into a tizzy. And, of course, that's earned media for him. Anytime there's a tizzy going on about Donald Trump, he's in the news. He's being talked about. And he recognized a long time ago that that's actually a good thing for him when you're running for president, when you're trying to push forward with your candidacy. The more you're talked about, the better off you are, even if sometimes it's in a negative way. So he decided to lean into that. And now he had a couple of speeches, a couple of events yesterday, and he was talking about the border, the crisis at the border, which pretty much any objective observer could look at and recognize that there is a huge, huge distinction between how the border was handled under Trump's presidency and how it's being handled under Joe Biden's presidency. And I mean, the numbers are there. No matter what kind of spin you want to put on it, no matter what sort of partisan blinders you may have or wish other people had, the numbers are there. They are there to look at. You can look and see. Things are not going well if you believe in having a secure border. Now, Joe Biden may do everything in his power, and his administration and his spokespeople will do everything in their power to blame this on congressional Republicans. But let's keep in mind that most of what's going on there has to do with the executive orders that Joe Biden himself entered upon taking office. And pretty much a rational observer can look at that and recognize that this current influx that we are experiencing is the direct result of the policies implemented by this administration. So with that being said, obviously, there's been a lot of news lately about some violent encounters, crimes being committed by people who have crossed illegally. We've had some very high-profile murders, unfortunately, involving people who were illegal immigrants. And it's not good. On top of the fact that you've got the whole fentanyl trafficking thing, which is in its own right is essentially causing a bloodbath. So what does Donald Trump do? He rephrases it, reframes it, and now he's calling it Biden's border bloodbath, which, you know, good for him for the alliteration, has that sort of ring to it. It's better than Build Back Better, if we're going to go with that. So he's leaning into it, of course. And once again, the left is in a tizzy over it. Oh, my goodness. We can't allow this. This is terrible, violent rhetoric. Now, if you were watching any of the news yesterday, you saw that this sort of contrast between the two styles was brought up to White House press secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Fox News' Peter Ducey pressed her on the issue. Actually, he pressed both John Kirby and Jean-Pierre on this issue. And the ensuing exchange was something to behold. Ducey brought up, I think it was during the 2020 election, when Joe Biden used the term bloodbath to say he didn't want that it to be a negative, you know, he didn't want there to be a bloodbath amongst the candidates. So he was using the term properly. He wasn't calling for violence. He was saying he didn't want there to be violence. Okay, fair enough. I mean, you can't condemn the guy for saying that. So Ducey asks Karine Jean-Pierre about this difference and contrasting them. And if you were watching or happened to catch a clip maybe on social media, it was a sight to behold, because there was this moment where she really did look like her brain was rebooting. Like you could almost picture the little, like, you know, circle kind of going over her head, because she was trying to distinguish between Trump's use of the term and Biden's use of the term, and saying how the context is so critical and so important, which, okay, yes, context is important. But the distinction she's attempting to draw, or was attempting to draw, was one without a difference. When Trump used the term, when he used it with regard initially regarding the auto industry, he was saying, this is a bad thing. We don't want this to happen. It's going to be bad for the auto industry if I don't win, if Joe Biden wins this election. Okay, how is that any different from Biden's use of the term? It's not. And now that he's leaning into it and referring to Biden's border bloodbath, he's again using it in a critical sense. He's saying it's a bad thing. The border is a mess. People are getting killed. People are getting hurt. This is bad. We don't want this. He's blaming Joe Biden for it, but he's basically saying this is bad. You need a change. We need a change. This is why. So how is that any different? It's not. And yet Karine Jean-Pierre and John Kirby and all of the White House spokespeople and the pundits on the left are trying to twist it into somehow Donald Trump is calling for a bloodbath, but he's not. He's calling for his reelection. He's saying, you want to reelect me because things are bad now, and they're going to continue to be bad if I'm not reelected. But he's not calling for violence. He's not calling for a bloodbath. And the fact that this is the spin that they're going to take, this is the approach they're going to take. And we got 7 months. And even if he wins, we're going to have 4 years after that of this continued spin and twist and, you know, use context when it's someone on the left saying it, completely disregard context when it's someone on the right saying it, particularly if it's Donald Trump. But, you know, that's, we know what their game plan is. It's plain as day. And then they continued on with that, because in his speech yesterday, when he was talking about the murderer of Lake and Riley, basically talking about criminals who are here illegally, he referred to them as animals. And if he immediately said, oh, no, I know they tell me not to stay, not to call them animals, but I'm going to call them animals. And what's the story out of that? Donald Trump calls immigrants animals. Well, no, he was calling a specific subset of people who are here illegally, particularly the people who are committing violent crimes, animals. Now, you know, I'm a Christian. I can understand the argument that you should not refer to other human beings as animals. We're all children of God. I get that. We're talking about political rhetoric here. And you can criticize his use of the term, but if you want to try and characterize it as him calling all immigrants animals, once again, you're being dishonest, you're being disingenuous, but that is their playbook. That is how they do. Folks, as I said, we've got 7 months. We've got to brace ourselves for this. We've got to prepare for this. If you are on the right, if you are someone who is politically active and engaged, you know you have to be braced for this. So just get ready. It's coming. We're seeing it already. When we come back, we're going to be talking to a good friend of mine, Thomas LaDuke, who is in Michigan. And I want to talk to him a little bit about what's going on in Michigan and their politics. Is it really, could it possibly be in play in the election coming up? We're going to find out what he thinks about that when we come back right after this. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today, folks. You are listening to Susie Moore filling in for Tony today. I'm very honored to be here with you. And I'm also very happy right now to have with me as a guest my good friend and former producer, Thomas LaDuke. Good morning or good afternoon, Duke. How are you?
Oh, great. Good morning. Thank you for the invite. Good to hear your voice today.
Likewise. Likewise. Yeah, I forget you're an hour ahead of me. I'm still in morning time, but you're in afternoon time, aren't you?
That is correct. I can tell the future. I'm that far ahead of you.
That's right. my personal psychic. So I wanted to have you on today to talk because, you are in Michigan, and yeah. I know you've got a pretty good sense of, you know, how things are going there in the Mitten State. And I want to know something. Is Michigan, is it really possibly in play in November?
Yeah, it actually is. I'm begrudgingly saying this because, you know, I've written at Red State a number of times. Michigan's a blue state. You know, mm-hmm. Shut your pie hole if you think it's anything else.
I feel like I've edited some of those articles. That's why I'm questioning this.
That's right, yeah. But in the county that I am in, which is Macomb County, home of the Reagan Democrats, you could Google it. I mean, Macomb County was the center of this during Reagan's two campaigns and actually went to Trump in 2016 by over 44,000 votes, which is why he won the state by 11,000 votes. We do have pockets where occasionally Democrats who are mostly union members cross over and say, we'll vote for the Republican. And everything else in Michigan, it's run by the unions. It's a Democrat state. But Joe Biden has done so fabulously bad, more so than I think any of us could have ever imagined, that you have people that are like, yeah, I go and vote Democrat, straight ticket. I don't think I can vote for him this time. And it puts some stuff into play. And then, of course, when we had the primary, you know, last month, we had Rashida Tlaib and her group basically say, we don't like the Biden administration coddling Israel. Don't vote for him in the primary, which he was really the only person to vote for on the Dem side. And they did a successful protest vote. And it has moved to where it's up for grabs right now, where Trump could possibly win it again like he did in 2016.
Wouldn't that be something? I know I saw that there was an article today, I think the Wall Street Journal came out with it, saying, you know, in all the battleground, in six of the seven battleground states, Trump is up. And that includes Michigan. I think Wisconsin's the only one where he's not up.
I'm still skeptical. Sure. The RNC under the new leadership now has actually done something positive in terms of election integrity, which you hear a lot of people yell and scream about, particularly here in this state. But they haven't done anything about it since 2020. They basically fundraised off it and made it look like they cared, as opposed to actually doing something positive. But the RNC is actually now, they're challenging the Secretary of State here, Jocelyn Benson, and saying, how is it that there are more registered voters in X amount of counties than you actually have votes, or people that were registered that actually have more people in the county? Or I think you know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying. There's more registered voters than there are people.
Right. I'm so far ahead into the future, I'm getting confused. But
those time loops are deadly.
Right. You basically have the RNC actually challenging this now in court and actually having proof of it, as opposed to just writing a story that I believe that, you know, Trump won here in 2020. So along with that, and then also with the reorganization of the state party, who had somebody who was probably leaning more towards the Democrats, and wanted to destroy the party, in my view, from within for the 2024 election, Michigan is up for play, in my opinion, at the moment.
Yeah, and how much of that do you think is RFK going to play a role in? Because he's qualified for the ballot there, too, and he's polling decently.
Yeah, that is actually kind of one of the wild cards, I think. And I don't know. I haven't seen much of a groundswell here for him, even with the diehards that are Democrats. So right. I'm going to give it another month or so to actually see what they can do here in Michigan. But if, you know, it's any indication in some of the other states, particularly in the Rust Belt area, he could peel 3 to 4% maybe, and that could be the game for Joe Biden.
Right. If you're talking about a margin of, 10, 12, 20,000 votes, when you talk about that larger percentage, I mean, don't forget Jill Stein just peeled off a small percentage of votes in a couple of those swing states in 2016. And, that made the difference. It made enough of a difference that the Democrats were mad at her. So
still.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Yeah, they're still mad at her. And she's back again for more abuse.
Some people are built like that, like people who write about politics.
Right. Definitely. That's true. That's true. So in our remaining minutes, I want to change up a little bit. And you wrote recently about how you're recognizing the need to maybe disengage and be less reliant on technology. What is it that's telling you that, Duke? As technology is in your ear right now.
Yeah, my inherent fear that that the technology one day is just not going to work. I actually talked about this on my Facebook video show today. There was an excellent documentary that I just plead with people to go and watch. It's called Grid Down, Power Up. And it is about our reliance on electricity and how, last month, Susie, that we had AT&T went out for 3 or 4 hours?
Oh, yeah, in February,
Yeah, and so what would happen if a 2003 scenario where the East Coast lost power? Well, what would happen if that happened today? And it terrifies me that I'm so reliant on being able to check my phone or contact people at a moment's notice. What happens if that just got pulled away from us? And it's something that I think we all should be taking serious. Most of the people that I watch, I mean, Tucker Carlson had Dennis Quaid on, who's in the documentary about this. It's something that we should really, look at, because the authorities are only going to be able to do so much. And if all of a sudden we have just an electromagnetic pulse happen, which could happen with a solar flare, not with anything that the Chinese and the Russians have done, it's really got me thinking about, okay, what happens if everything goes down for a week or two, the coming chaos, you can guess that, right?
No, you're right. We've become so reliant on our technology that we've gotten lazy about those sorts of things.
100%. And it, my mom recently passed. I was in fear with that. It's like, okay, the Alzheimer's patient, what are you going to do if she can't watch Matlock and Perry Mason?
Right.
That was terrifying to me. But even now, without that responsibility, I'm still looking at this and going, okay, what am I going to do? And,
we've all got to be prepared.
Society could break down very easily. And I don't think we actually contemplate that enough. And that's why I wrote the article.
No, I agree with you. Now, Duke, in the remaining seconds we have left, tell people where they can find your work.
At the front page of Red State, and then also at Duke Over America on Facebook. And I do a radio show also. By the way, I loved your piece today, More to the Point.
Awesome.
right there at the end where you're like, it's a blessing that we actually have a clear choice in 2024.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Duke.
Positive.
Appreciate you being on with us today. We will look for you at Red State and on Twitter at IrishDuke2. Thanks so much. Folks, we will be back right after this with more of Tony Katz Today. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today. Susie Moore filling in for Tony today. Loving the bumper music. It's taking me back to my youth, which is longer ago in the past now than I wish it were. But while I've still got my memory and my wits about me, I wanted to kind of follow up on something I was just discussing with my guest, Thomas LaDuc. We were talking about, the election, which is going to be looming large for all of us for the next few months. And the fact that, it's looking actually somewhat promising for Donald Trump in swing states, states that he maybe won in 2016, but then lost to Joe Biden in 2020. There was a Wall Street Journal article out today that talked about how and there's new polling out that shows Trump up in 6 of 7 swing states. Let's see, which ones are those? I know Michigan is one of them that he's up in, and I know that Wisconsin is the one that he is not up in just yet. But we're going to talk about that in a minute. In any event, the polling does not look great for Joe Biden. I'm sure he's not happy with it. I understand that Jill Biden wasn't happy when asked about it today. We got Trump up by 8 in North Carolina. We got him up by 5 in Arizona. We've got him up by 4 in Nevada, 3 in Pennsylvania, 3 in Georgia, 2 in Michigan, and then Biden up by 3 in Wisconsin. Which is, kind of explains why you saw Donald Trump in Michigan and Wisconsin yesterday and why you're going to see Joe Biden there. I think he's going to Wisconsin this week, too. They're going to focus on those states because they know there's a lot at stake there. What's interesting about all of that is, we're over half a year out from the election, and polls are just snapshots. They're just temporal snapshots. They tell you what the people, a sample group said at that point in time, and you can't take them as gospel. If you did that, then Hillary Clinton would have become president in 2016 because everybody had her up in the polls, and look what happened. If you're like me, you sat up and watched the results come in and you kept thinking, oh my gosh, is this really happening? Are we really going to be spared a Hillary Clinton presidency? Oh my goodness, we are. So you can't rely too much on them, but they do tell you something. And it's interesting because you've got an incumbent president who should be running well ahead of the controversial former president. When I say controversial, I'm of course being understated with that. He's facing 91 charges. He's under criminal indictment in 4 different jurisdictions. He is the bad orange man, the person that is the devil incarnate for those on the left and riddled with TDS. So the fact that he's actually ahead of Biden in the polling, it tells you something. And it tells you that the Biden presidency has not been a rousing success. So much so that even though the primary is already set, the nominations are pretty well set. We know who the major party nominees are going to be. It's going to be Donald Trump. It's going to be Joe Biden. Rematch of 2020. But there's still primaries going on. And yesterday there were primaries in, Wisconsin, Rhode Island, New York, where else? Connecticut. Not a lot of suspense there in terms of who was going to win those presidential primary races, except for one thing. The uncommitteds and the undesignateds, which, those are protest votes right now. Those are people that they may come home to their party candidate, in the general, but at the same time in the primary, they are registering their displeasure with that top of the ticket person. The Democrats are trouncing the Republicans in that, and I say that in a good way. In other words, in Rhode Island, the uncommitted vote, 14.9%. Now, Biden, of course, got 82.6%, so obviously he's winning those delegates. But the bottom line is almost 15% of Rhode Island primary voters said they're uncommitted. They're not going to commit to Joe Biden. What about the Republicans? What did they do? Well, there was a few that were uncommitted, 2%, whereas Donald Trump got 84.5%. So there's a little bit of a disparity there. Same thing in Wisconsin. There, the designation was uninstructed delegate. In Wisconsin, 8.3% of the Democrats went uninstructed. In other words, they're not going for Joe Biden, at least not right now. He gets 88% of the vote. On the Republican side, 2.2%. So you've got like a, 4-time differential there. Basically, the uncommitted are a much bigger problem for the Democrats than they are for the Republicans. And again, We don't know what they're going to do come November. These people may all come home, if you will. But this has got to have the Biden campaign worried. And I think it does. I think we're seeing that. We're seeing that in how they are reacting to these stories. We're seeing that in the spin that they're putting out. We're seeing that in, you know, their shift of focus. The one thing that we're not seeing them do is tout their record. I think Joe Biden's giving a speech today on lowering health care costs. And I know for a while he was trying to tout his great economy, and that seems to have kind of waned. They don't seem to really be relying on that, at least not right now. The biggest thing they've got going for him is that he's not Donald Trump. And there's a significant portion of the American populace and American voters that appeals to. And that's the biggest thing he's got going. So it's going to be a negative campaign, a negative bloodbath, if you will. The other problem the Democrats have to face and deal with, and it's why they're throwing everything in the kitchen sink at him, is Bobby Kennedy. RFK Jr. is qualified now for the ballot in a number of swing states, and he's continuing to push forward with that effort. He's now named his vice presidential nominee, Nicole Shanahan, who's a progressive leftist, which that may shore up some of the uncommitted votes. They may decide that they want to go with him, and that may have enough of an appeal. They may be as disenchanted with the Biden administration and think, okay, here's somebody who's essentially a Democrat, even though he's running as an independent now. And he holds to those core values. He's a little different from the Dems in some respects, but overall, he's checking the boxes that we want checked. So that's got to be giving the Biden campaign heartburn. And I think, again, that's why we're seeing them react so negatively towards Kennedy's campaign. Yes, he could pull some from the Republicans, and he probably will, but at a much lesser rate, it seems like, than from the Democrats. And so he's cause for concern if you're a Biden supporter. I did this little thing. It's kind of like a little mini podcast. It's called More to the Point. Duke referenced at the end of that last segment. Two or three times a week, I just record like a little minute commentary. Just trying to kind of hit on something that's maybe in the news and sort of distill it down to a little bite-sized piece to talk about. And the audio plays here at a station in St. Louis, and then we share it on Red State. My more to the point today was talking about the gift of the 2024 election. Now, I started out and I recognized that we've seen polling, we've seen stories coming out, ever since this election started gearing up, about how there are huge portions of would-be voters who are not happy with the two main options. They are not happy that we are having a rematch of 2020. They would prefer somebody other than Donald Trump and Joe Biden be at the top of the ticket. We've seen those stories now for close to a year. If I'm being perfectly honest, I was hoping we were not going to have a rematch either. I think both from a getting a little long in the tooth standpoint and from a baggage standpoint on as to both candidates. I would have preferred younger, fresher, less baggage-laden candidates, particularly on the Republican side, just from a standpoint of wanting to be victorious in November and hopefully, turn this car around. But be that as it may, we've got Joe Biden and Donald Trump, and there's a blessing in that. There's a silver lining there, and I don't think that should be overlooked. For the first time in over a century, I think we're going back to Teddy Roosevelt time. The first time in over a century, the American voters are being given the opportunity to choose between two presidents, two men with presidential records, two men who had presidential administrations back to back. And the vast majority of people who are going to be voting in 2024 are old enough. Even if they weren't old enough to vote in the prior elections, they're old enough to remember what things were like in 2016 and what things were like in 2020 and what they're like now. And a lot of those young people who maybe weren't old enough to vote in 2016, they're coming of age now. They're coming of age in an economy that is not favorable. It is not user-friendly for someone who's just starting out and doesn't have a lot of resources. Trying to borrow anything is not a good idea because interest rates are so high. The housing market is, it's still elevated. everything is expensive. Gas is expensive. Groceries are expensive. And, you know, college loans are expensive. The ones that haven't been forgiven yet. That's a different story. We could go on a whole other rant about that. But let's just acknowledge that particularly for young people right now, it's not a good economy. And they can see that. They're starting to face the reality of what it means to be an adult and be responsible in a not great economy. They can see the difference in our foreign relations from 4 years ago to now. They can see the difference in our immigration situation from 4 years ago to now. There's a ready-made comparison sitting right on the table, right in front of their noses. So even the people that didn't vote in 2016 or 2020 can see this. And, you know, you can talk about all the rhetoric. You can say, oh, my gosh, what crazy thing did this guy say this, you know, today? What gaffe did Biden have? What crazy thing did Donald Trump say? We're going to be seeing a lot of coverage of that. We're going to be talking about those things because, of course, that's kind of what drives the news cycle. But the bottom line is, for those people who vote not purely based on party and not purely based on personality or, personality, positive and negative, for those who actually want to see results, who actually really kind of pay attention to policy, they've got a side-by-side comparison to look at. And, you know, that's rare. It's rare that we have that. We have that opportunity now. And I think Republicans would do well to hammer that home over and over and over again between now and November, because I think that's a win that goes in the win column for the Republicans. So I don't know, just something to think about. When we come back, we're going to switch things up a little bit and talk about something different. We're going to talk about heroes, because I don't think we get to talk about heroes quite enough these days. Stick around, folks. You're listening to Tony Katz today. Susie Moore filling in for him. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Tony Katz Today, folks. You are listening to Susie Moore filling in for Tony today. Again, honored and privileged to be here. One of the things I get to do that I love about my current gig, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I am a recovering attorney. I've practiced law for almost 30 years. But currently, I am the deputy managing editor at Red State. And what that enables me to do is not only one of my great passions, which is writing, but it enables me to edit other great writers and make sure that people that are Red State readers, which I encourage you to be, are exposed to not just straight news, because we do cover a lot of straight news, but we have a lot of commentary, a lot of analysis, and a lot of maybe sort of off the beaten path stories that our writers cover. And it's my privilege to be able to edit and make sure those get published and put out there in the atmosphere, if you will, because I think it's important to have all the different perspectives being shared. And one of our contributors, Ward Clark is his name, and he is an Alaska native. Well, he's not an Alaska native. He's an Iowa native, but he lives in Alaska now. And he has all kinds of fun stories that he does. Great stuff about the great outdoors, about hunting, about guns, about military stuff. He's just kind of a fount of information. But he wrote a couple pieces yesterday that I really wanted to highlight with you all in the remaining minutes of this hour, because I don't think we get to talk about our heroes enough. You may have seen the news about this. The last surviving member of the crew of the battleship USS Arizona passed away over the weekend. His name was Lieutenant Commander Lou Conter, and he was 102. And he passed away in his Grass Valley, California home, surrounded by his family. So he was the last surviving member from the crew of the Arizona. Now, there are still a few survivors of Pearl Harbor, but not very many. I think there's 19, maybe. I know we lost like 2,400 Americans on December 7th, 1941, and obviously that presaged our entry into the war. So we're kind of losing that generation of people, and I don't know if you've been to D.C. I have and had an opportunity to check out the World War II Memorial, which is a beautiful tribute and a beautiful memorial. It's one of my favorite memorials there in D.C. It's definitely worth checking out. And just kind of wanted to pay homage and tribute to our heroes. It seems like today the stories of the military aren't quite as heroic. They're kind of sad. We're seeing issues with recruiting. We're seeing issues with, you know, a focus on woke ideology and DEI and things that, you know, I guess if you don't have to worry about having a ready military and you don't have to worry about having a fit fighting force, maybe you could, you know, could focus on those things. But that's not the purpose of the military. And unfortunately, we're seeming to lose that. So I wanted to make note of Lieutenant Commander Conter's passing and pay tribute to both him and his fellow soldiers who've helped protect this country. Ward wrote another article yesterday about another World War II hero. I thought it was worth sharing as well, is Gunnery Sergeant John Bessalone. Now, Bessalone was from New Jersey, and when he originally entered the military, he served in the Army. But then he went back and joined the Marines after that, and he, you know, had a heroic record. He was sadly killed in battle. But these are two great stories of World War II heroes, people, men who served their country, who sacrificed basically everything, in Bessalone's case, to protect our nation and what we stand for. And as I said, we're kind of losing that generation. We're getting to the point where our World War II veterans are no longer with us. And so I think it's important to stop and remember that. Even while we honor our military, the people who serve in our military today, I think that's important too. There are a lot of men and women who are sacrificing their time with their families, they're putting themselves at risk, and they're going to war for us, or at least ready to go to war for us, and they are not the ones who are in the news and making all the highlight reels because they had a funny or weird TikTok video, that sort of thing. But they are, they're the reason that we're able to do this. They're the reason we're able to have shows like this. They're the reason we're able to vote and have elections. And you know, I know it sounds trite, but I just feel like we need to make sure that we are recognizing both the heroes of the past and the heroes that are helping us today as well. When we come back, we're going to be talking about more of what's going on in the news today here on Tony Katz Today, and then we'll be joined by my Red State colleague Jennifer Oliver O'Connell also in the second hour. Stick around, folks. You're listening to Tony Katz Today. Susie Moore filling in for Tony. We'll be back right after the top of the hour.